I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I wanna drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is the Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, just about 10 minutes left in today's trading session. We are getting ready to wrap up the day as well as the trading week. And we've seen some buying once again into these last few minutes. That means everything in terms of those major equity averages. We're now in the green. So as Charlie mentioned, not at our highs, although it looks like the Dow and the S&P getting close. S&P, though, up 0.7%. Same story for the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the NASDAQ just eking out a little bit of a gain.
And it's going to be, for the week, Carol, the Dow up more than 0.1% if it sticks
so
right here.
Barely.
Let's get into it with Aaron Kennan, co-founder and CEO of Clear Harbor Asset Management. They've got over $1 billion in assets under management. Aaron joins us this afternoon once again from Stamford, Connecticut. You can see him if you're watching on Quick Take or on YouTube. Aaron, good to have you with us this afternoon. How are you?
Doing just great, Tim. Thanks for having me back.
So what's going on with the markets right now? Because Carol mentioned volatility today. Throughout much of the day, we saw stocks moving between gains and losses, but we're seeing a little bit of conviction right now. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, clearly we don't take much away from a low volume day ahead of Thanksgiving on a Friday. But, if you look at just sort of on a quarter-to-date basis, just taking a slightly higher level view, clearly, we've seen the dollar finally depreciate about 7% from the peak from late September. And on the heels of that, we saw a nice risk on trade occur over that period. So equities are up 10, 11, 12%, depending on the index. The global indices are up about 11, almost 12%. The US S&P is up a little over 10% over that period. And even the bond markets caught a reasonable bit, the broad sort of Bloomberg aggregate up 1.1%. So, we think that sort of augurs reasonably well. The Fed did a lot of jawboning this week, Tim and Carol, as we saw, trying to keep.
It's even hard to keep track of all that jawboning.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, trying to keep the sort of hawkish tone embedded in the market. But, the market's currently pricing another 100 basis points. They've already done 400. And so we're in the latter innings of a tightening cycle, and we're starting to see incipient levels of deceleration on inflation. And so, I think that bodes well for, the Fed to get out of our way for at least the back half of 2023.
I do feel the narrative has definitely changed from Fed officials, Aaron, even if they're not using the word pivot, they're kind of talking around it. And I laugh that when we've got a most read story by our Steve Matthews and Serena Yu, where it's talking about Wall Street economists split on whether Fed cuts rates in 2023, that we're starting to think about a Fed cut next year as a possibility. That to me is a real big shift in the narrative.
Yeah, I agree, Carol. And I think there's also, an anticipation that the Fed's policies do, in fact, work with that lag.
Right.
And we're going to start to see employment. We're certainly seeing the anecdotal evidence of employment softening. The JOLTS data has at least softened on the margin. And so maybe the Fed does move that aggregate demand curve to such a degree after, let's say, hitting that 5% terminal rate that we start to see the economic deceleration that they anticipated. And I suspect over the next 2 quarters, we'll see a reasonably significant change in the data set. And that'll set up for an interesting 2023. But then we have earnings to really think about. And we have the gridlock in Congress. We don't have that fiscal stimulus that we had over the last couple of years to sort of serve as that tailwind for growth. And we have a demographic picture that every year just looks a little worse.
Right.
And then we have debt levels that spiked during COVID and are not getting much better. And so we'll probably have a debt load in this country of 3.5 times public debt load, 3.5 times where we were the last time we had an inflation crisis in the 70s. So it doesn't bode well for sort of growth trending back or above trend, above, let's say, a 2% trend. It seems to suggest that we're going to be in a below 2% world for a long while here in the U.S.
I'm kind of glad you went there, Aaron. I do think it's important that we watch the debt loads overall. And certainly, you know, we talk a lot about specifically consumer spending and how they're spending and where they're putting it. And I think that's going to be a great indicator, possibly to the downside of what happens in 2023. You did say, and I want to go back to, you expect over the next two quarters to see a very different data set. Will that data set, I'm assuming, mean recession or not necessarily, or just kind of an extreme slowing down?
Well, I think the market is trying to sort that out. As we know, the equity market's a discounting instrument, and, mm-hmm. and certainly the volatility that we've seen of late is sort of this uncertainty around, one, will we actually enter a true recession? Maybe we already did. The MBER hasn't come out and indicated whether the prior two quarters were, in fact, an official recession. We'll find that out next year, I guess.
Right.
I think that maybe the more important question is whether or not the recession is shallow or deep. If it's shallow, I think a great deal of that is sort of was priced in at the end of September into the market. One reason why we've seen the rally. If it's a deeper recession, well, this may be a sort of a false dawn for equities, having rallied nicely off of those levels. And so we're certainly being, you know, extraordinarily mindful of that. Mm-hmm. Certainly, the stickiness factor in CPI is wages, and with higher wages, you tend to see margins contract. And so we're certainly going to keep vigilance on that trend going into 2023. What do margins do in a slower growth world when wages haven't corrected and normalized? And certainly an important factor. Then, of course, globally, we have, you know, another pivot, which is the zero COVID policy in China, and whether or not President Xi's pivot is real or not, because that has huge repercussions for global demand, demand for copper, demand for oil, and demand for just generally goods and services.
Well, that commodity space that we talked about that earlier, and I think it's going back to China too, is so interesting. We have a ton of stories on the Bloomberg this week that even as they seem to be easing that COVID zero thinking, people are afraid to go out in the public because they're just afraid they're going to get COVID. And this is over in China, and that's going to impact growth over in the Chinese economy for a while.
It'll impact growth, but it also has huge global repercussions. I mean, Chinese growth is expected to be around 3% next year. It was only a few years ago, we were talking 7, 8, 9, 10% type of growth. The idea that they could switch off the zero COVID switch probably increases oil demand immediately by about 1.5 million barrels a day by most estimates. So
wow.
Has huge global repercussions. And of course, the war in Ukraine is having massive negative repercussions for the price of natural gas in Europe's largest economy in Germany.
Right.
I mean, that's the largest economy in Europe. They need cheap natural gas to be able to do what they do, to be that industrial powerhouse.
Right.
And they don't have it. And it looks like they won't have it next year either. And maybe the year after that, too.
All right. Well, I monopolized the time with you. Tim's mad at me, but that's because we love talking with you, Aaron.
Aaron, we're going to have to get you back on soon because, Carol. It's okay.
We will.
You had good questions, Carol.
Aaron, have a great, great Thanksgiving. He's co-founder, CEO at Clear Harbor Asset Management.